Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of September. It's All Things Political, Monday at 9, here on the Ideas Network. And Bill Schneider is with us this hour, a leading U.S. political analyst, expert on public opinion research. He is a distinguished senior fellow and resident scholar at Third Way and the professor of public policy at George Mason University in Washington. He's been CNN's senior political analyst since 1990. He's also a contributing editor to the National Journal and the Atlantic Monthly. He has been labeled, and we'll ask him about this label, which is not a bad one to have, the Aristotle of American politics by the Boston Globe and Campaigns and Elections magazine, called him the most consistently intelligent analyst on television. He is part of the CNN team that was awarded an Emmy for the 2006 election coverage and a Peabody for the 2008 coverage. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Bill. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. A lot of midterm election to cover the first part of our program, but branch us into whatever you would like. All things political is why we call, it's all things political. So whatever you'd like to talk about on the political front is A-OK. The email address, you can use that as well, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hello, Bill. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure to be here.
Perfect guest to have on as we approach the midterms. So what do you think? Should the Democrats run against the Tea Party?
Well, they can certainly try. I'm not sure it's going to work because people aren't really voting on the Tea Party or, in fact, on the Republicans. It's mostly a protest vote against the Democrats, who many voters feel haven't done their jobs, haven't lived up to their expectations. And this is a time when the Democrats control both the White House and Congress. So essentially, it's a send them a message election about what's going on in the country and the bad economy.
Yeah. Do you think that the Democrats made a mistake, Bill, in going with health care?
They didn't make a mistake because it was something that was urgently needed, and Democrats have been talking about it for almost a century. The problem was one of timing. I think there was a sense that the public had one agenda, which was jobs, jobs, jobs.
Right.
And after an initial stimulus plan, which most people think really hasn't worked, although it did work, it was just limited in its impact, the president quickly took up health care reform. A lot of voters think, well, that's a good idea, but why do we have to do it now? We're much more interested in getting and keeping jobs and dealing with the foreclosure crisis. So there has developed a sense that Obama's agenda comes from somewhere else. It's not the public's agenda.
Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he latch on to the public's agenda? Why not plan for massive public works jobs, or I don't know what else he could do to really get people back to work? So there are two questions there. Should he do a massive public works program? And why hasn't he really taken on this issue front and center?
Well, a massive public works program is a lot of public spending, and public spending has lost favor. People don't have a lot of confidence in it over the past 20 years or so. That would have been fine in the 30s when Roosevelt tried it. Lyndon Johnson tried some of it in the 1960s, although then the economy was actually very good. Now it's kind of hard to spend that kind of money. Democrats did have a big majority. They probably could have passed something like that, but I think there were still enough moderate and conservative Democrats and enough resistance to it, solid resistance from Republicans, that it would have been a little bit risky. So this is a case where compromise, that is a modest public works program, if you want to call $787 billion modest, and a lot of economists do. Larry Summers once said, when the market overshoots, public policy has to overshoot too. Well, they didn't. The result was they got some bang for the bucks, but not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of a peace dividend, Bill, in withdrawal of combat troops from Iraq?
Not really. Iraq was expensive, but we have about 50,000 soldiers and troops still there. Of course, we have a big effort in Afghanistan, so I'm not sure people are going to notice any real peace dividend.
The president has a couple months before the midterm elections. Is there anything he could do to make the economy better in that amount of time?
Not really. About the best thing they can do is create a concern about what the Republicans would do if they took charge of the House or the Senate. He can ask people to stay the course. That's what Ronald Reagan did in 1982 when he faced a setback when his program wasn't working. In fact, we were in worse shape then than we are now, over 10% unemployment. We're just below that right now. The problem is that everyone knew what Reagan's course was. He had set it out clearly and defiantly, and it seemed to be a significant departure. The Obama course is not as clear, and I think a lot of liberals and Democrats aren't certain. They don't have a lot of confidence in what he's done. You know, I get questions from Democrats all the time. You know, if Democrats had the presidency and they had both houses of Congress, why didn't they just govern? Why didn't they pass the public option? Why didn't they pass a bigger public works bill? Well, the answer is it's kind of hard to hold Democrats together to do things like that.
And also, this administration was trying to woo Republicans.
They were. President Obama was elected in part because of his appeal to bipartisanship. He was elected to end the partisan warfare. In fact, we've had now four presidents who have gotten elected to end the division of the country. The first president, Bush, promised a kinder, gentler America. Bill Clinton was a new Democrat and the third way. George W. Bush started his campaign by saying, I'm a uniter, not a divider. And, of course, Obama proposed to unify the country because he said he would reach across party lines. That was his mandate, and he wanted to try to fulfill it. And he did. He did. But the Republicans, by and large, were just not interested. And from the very beginning, way back in February 2009, there was almost no support for anything President Obama really wanted to do.
So what happens, Bill, should the Republicans take the House and perhaps the Senate?
It will not be pretty. People may believe they're voting for cooperation and moderation between the parties, but the fact is what they're more likely to get is gridlock, because the current mood of the Republican Party, really generated by the Tea Party movement, is one of obstruction. And that's because, you know, they are organized not around a leader of their own. They're organized around opposition to Obama. Obama is their anti-leader. And they are determined to resist just about everything he stands for, because they think, well, if he didn't get his agenda from the public, where did he get it? And they think it came from socialist ideology. So the result is they're determined, just bound and determined, to resist and oppose everything he's trying to do and try to reverse some of it. They probably want to, they certainly want to reverse the health care plan. They can't do that as long as he's president. He'll never sign a repeal. But they can try to hack away at it and refuse to fund it. They'd like to reverse the financial regulations. They just want to do the opposite of everything he wants. So it's going. I think it could very well be an ugly 2 years between now and 2012.
Aren't we already at that state? I can't imagine gridlock getting much worse.
Well, yes, we are at that state. Gridlock has been the rule for the last 2 years. Believe me, it could get worse.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me as though the Democrats, and I'm not sure what they do with this, but they've been handed a gift in the form of all the publicity surrounding O'Donnell. We got a candidate here who's, even Karl Rove says, is pretty nutty. How did she get elected? And I would imagine this could help the Democrats, do you think?
Well, you know, she's dabbled in witchcraft, she said. She's had a lot of strange things in her past, and some Republicans tried to distance themselves. The Democrats would like to hold her up as the symbol of the Tea Party movement because she is so far outside the mainstream of American politics. Well, she's a Senate nominee from Delaware. I'm not sure how much that's going to mean to voters around the country. But she won the nomination largely because it's a small state and money started pouring in from all over the country to run ads and do promotions for her and against her opponent, Mike Castle, who's been around Delaware politics for about 30 years. A lot of the answer is simple, money.
Money. And is this a result of, do we know where this money is coming from? Is this a result of the Supreme Court decision that money can pour in now that used to not be able to pour in?
Well, a lot of it does come from corporations, which can now spend money as much as they want, as long as it's not coordinated with a campaign. It comes from the Tea Party movements, the political action committees associated with them. And there's a real question how much they've coordinate with the campaign. A lot of it just comes from angry individuals. There are a lot of people who are giving money to Tea Party candidates because they're really furious, and there is a lot of it out there.
And what are they furious about?
On the right, they're furious that Obama, they believe, is leading the country away from the Constitution, that his agenda is really socialist. And frankly, a lot of them doubt his legitimacy as president. I wouldn't be surprised if the Republicans take the House that there's not going to be pressure for, I don't think they're crazy enough to let this happen, but there's going to be pressure for impeachment. Darrell Issa from California is going to be chairman of the Government Oversight Committee. He's likely to start subpoenaing members of the White House to investigate things like the effort to get candidates out of Democratic primaries in Pennsylvania and Colorado. Were they offered jobs illegally?
Oh my goodness!
So you could start seeing investigations of the White House. There could be pressure for impeachment. I don't know on what grounds, but I know that a lot of conservatives doubted Clinton's legitimacy because he was a war protester in their view and a draft dodger. And now they doubt Obama's legitimacy for a lot of reasons.
And are some of the reasons the goofy ones, that he wasn't born in the United States, that he's somehow an other?
Muslim. Some people, about a quarter of the country, think he might be Muslim.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, those things do exist. And yes, that does happen. But basically, they think he's got an alien ideology. They think he is a socialist.
And yet the Democrats, many of them, think that he's way too far to the right.
That's right. That's why his moderation is kind of a trap, because he's got enemies
right,
on the right, and he's got critics on the left who show no enthusiasm for supporting Democrats in this election. The bottom line is there hasn't been a payoff. If the unemployment rate were dropping, if the economy were improving, everything would look better, including health care. Everything would look better because it would look like a payoff for an improving economy. In the end, the test is pragmatism. Americans believe whatever works is right. And Obama's program, in their view, has really not worked. The Congressional Budget Office says it has, but in limited ways. Most Americans say it isn't working, it hasn't worked, and therefore it's wrong.
Hmm. What do you make of Michael Bloomberg courting Republican moderate candidates, courting Harry Reid? Is this his time to shine?
Yes. He sees himself as the anti-Tea Party leader.
Right.
Around the country. And in a way, he is. The Tea Party movement is fueled by populism, and that's a very powerful force. America is the most populist country in the world. I mean, next to the United States, the rest of the world is Saudi Arabia. Here, the people, when they're angry, they rise up. He's the anti-populist. He is probably, in my assessment, the most elitist politician in the country. His basic approach is, trust us, we know what we're doing. He speaks for the national establishment. He governs the nation's largest city. Now, he ran afoul of populism when he ran for a third term, spent over $100 million, and barely got reelected with 51% of the vote, because he's not a populist, and he defied popular will by running for a third term and getting the city council to change the rules for him. So, basically, he has become the spokesman for what he would regard, of course, as the sensible center, the establishment.
We have a ton of people who would like to speak with you, so we'll go to phone calls, Bill. Our number is 800-486-8655. Matthew in Madison, our first caller. Whoa, Matthew, hello. Turn the radio down,
hello?
Please. Yeah. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. So I just want to start out with a statistic here. It said that Obama has spent more money than every president from Washington to Reagan. And, I'm wondering if you guys would agree that most of the frustration of the Tea Party is spurred by the secretive actions by the Federal Reserve and their attempt at hyperinflation and the Ron Paul revolution.
No, I don't agree with that. Most of the frustration of the Tea Party is directed at Obama, not at the Federal Reserve. They're quite aware of how much money has been spent. If you look at the actual dollar amounts, in 2009, the first year of the Obama administration, the deficit quadrupled, and that got people very upset, very panicked. They realized that somewhere down the line we're going to have to pay a price for all that debt. That really stimulated a lot of the opposition. But it was Obama and his spending. I don't think it was the Federal Reserve or had anything to do with Ron Paul or his son Rand Paul, who could well be elected in Kentucky. But that's part of this anti-democratic wave.
Mm-hmm. You think Paul's chances are pretty good in Kentucky, Bill?
I do. I think there are a number of Tea Party types who are likely to get into the new Senate, and that's going to be a big problem for Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader. You're almost certain to get Joe Miller in Alaska, although Lisa Murkowski is trying to split the Republican vote now as a write-in candidate. You'll certainly have a new Tea Party candidate from Utah chosen by the convention, Mike Lee. You could well get Marco Rubio in Florida, and Rand Paul in Kentucky, and Joe Toomey Patrick Toomey, in Pennsylvania. So you're going to have five, maybe more. There's a chance, of course, that Sharon Engel could get elected in Nevada, mm-hmm. Ken Buck in Utah. So you could have seven or eight new Tea Party senators. They are going to give Mitch McConnell a very tough time because they have no real love or commitment to the Republican Party. One of the things that drives the Tea Party is not just Obama, but the sense that they have been betrayed by the Republicans. They really have no love for George W. Bush because they see him, too, as a very big spender. The deficit started increasing rapidly under Bush. Bush cut taxes and increased defense spending, and then the deficit just rose out of sight. So they really have they have some loyalty, but not a lot of love for the Republican Party. This sort of thing does emerge when people... when conservatives feel betrayed, and that's their mood right now.
We talked about what the Democrats should do with the Tea Party. What about the Republicans? Aren't they in a bit of a quandary about this?
They are, and I think Mitch McConnell better hope that the Republican Party does not win a majority in the Senate because it's going to be impossible for him to control that majority with all these new Tea Party figures in the party. Basically, the Tea Party figures want the Republican Party to stay the party of no. Obama will still be president. They want the party to resist everything he's standing for. But if they try to come up with a positive agenda for the Republicans, if they govern from the Senate as the majority party, they're going to have a tough time doing it. He's going to have a very hard, tough time holding that majority, if it is a majority, together to govern. So in a way, it'd be easier for him if he were the minority party, because then they could just go on just saying no.
This is all very upsetting. We deserve better than this, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We really do.
We do, and nobody can figure out how to deal with it. As I said before, we've had four presidents, all of whom were elected to end the partisan warfare in this country, which really has been going on since the 1960s. I thought it might take a major crisis. Well, we had one, 9/11.
Right.
And for 1 year after 9/11, the country was united. Democrats forgot this, but for a year after 9/11, most Democrats supported President Bush. That really didn't work because in 2002, they started the Iraq War rollout, and all the divisions got worse again. We thought maybe we needed a great charismatic leader like Barack Obama, but the challenge was there, and he got swept up in the division, and he really couldn't end it.
More phone calls in a moment. Bill Schneider, our guest, 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network. Second hour of our program this Monday, Farm Aid is having their 25th anniversary, 25 years for Farm Aid, in Milwaukee on October 2nd. We'll talk with two family farmers from Wisconsin about the importance of farming, young people going into farming, large farms and small farms, and eating food that is locally grown. All of that coming up, hour number two. More phone calls now for Bill Schneider. We go to Jim from Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to talk about Republican thinking and how they refuse to accept responsibility for actions. Don't bother me with the facts. I've made up my mind, and they justify and minimize and divert and take the victim stance. So the aspiring senator from Delaware, for example, says that the media is out to get her instead of ignoring the fact that she may well have misused her campaign funds. And in past examples, Sean Hannity saying that Oliver North was being attacked by liberals and Libyans instead of pointing out that he was really attacked because he broke the law giving arms to terrorists. And finally, Hannity also said that Chelsea Clinton was called a dog in the White House when she was 13 years old, that bullying was because of an accidental placement of a picture on the screen, when in reality the show was taped, and so if it had been an accident, they had time to remove it. So this kind of manipulation continues to go on, and they don't accept responsibility for actions.
And the question is?
Do you have a question, Jim?
Well, the question is, that to end that type of abuse, we have to name the abuse and get the American people realizing how the Republicans can manipulate instead of facing facts.
Well, Americans do, I think, see that both sides, they believe both sides sometimes play unfairly. The Republicans right now, there's no monopoly on dirty tricks. The Republicans are very skilled at it, and Democrats have been known to do it every now and then. And the voters are kind of sick of it. In fact, they see politics as some kind of a circus that goes on far away and has very little relation to their lives. you know, that's one reason why so many people are turned off by politics generally. Politics, in the view of most Americans, politics is the enemy of problem solving. Why can't we deal with the deficit? Why can't we deal with climate change? Why can't we deal with immigration? Because politics gets in the way. So there's always this hope that somehow if we elect people who aren't politicians, outsiders, business people, that somehow we could get things done and clean things up. It's kind of naive. You know, you can't run government like a business because business is not a democracy. If business were a democracy, it would look like politics. So there is a kind of disgust with politics, just as the caller is describing, and a lot of the dirty tricks that have gone with it.
We go to Amy from Milwaukee next. Hi, Amy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting when you said business is not a democracy. I'm concerned. I'm a liberal who's disappointed in Obama right now because of his appointment of Arne Duncan as his Secretary of Education. And a lot of people who are forming education policy right now in our country have never been in the classroom. And right now I feel like there's a movement to dismantle and discredit public education, which is the foundation of our country, I believe. And parents are happy with their schools, but there's this drumbeat of racing, of a competition, of running schools like businesses, and everything has become so high stakes that schools have become pressure cookers where really everyone's just trying to get a score, a test score. And I'm concerned about the race to the top. I think the election in D.C. was very interesting because Fenty was voted out, I believe, because of Michelle Rhee, the chancellor of the D.C. public schools. We need to work together to make our schools great. And our public schools right now are being torn down and torn apart by people who I believe want to profit. There are philanthropists who are funding movies like Waiting for Superman, where you're going to see that there's talk of all the public schools being terrible in this country. But what it is test scores, which is what public schools right now are being judged on, one test score, are directly correlated to the socioeconomic status of the students' parents who's taking them. So right now, you know, this is drive to fire teachers across the country, a real anti-union stance. But I read on a blog once that you can't fire poverty, so you're going to fire teachers.
Bill.
Well, certainly Michelle Rhee, the school chancellor in Washington, was the focus of a lot of controversy here. I am in Washington right now. And one of the reasons why Mayor Fenty was fired, public schools have been a controversial issue for some years now. A lot of conservatives, the caller is quite right, a lot of conservatives are enemies of public schooling. They believe that it's bureaucratic, that it's inefficient, that it's corrupt, and that they would just like to dismantle the public school edifice. Something interesting about the United States, by the way, we are the last industrial country to have universal health care, but we were the first major country to have universal public education. That started before we even became a country. Americans have always believed in public education. Healthcare is something else because public education, we believe, equalizes opportunity in this country, and that's what America should be about. But there has been a kind of sniper war to defund and reorganize public schools. There's no question they need a lot of reform. The caller is quite right, however, about one thing. Just about all the research I've ever seen on education shows that basically the factors like how much money the school spends and the quality of the teachers and the books and that the students read, all of those things kind of wash out once you take into account the parental background of the students. If the parents read books, the kids are going to read books. That influence tends to dominate everything else. So she's quite right that socioeconomic status has an awful lot to do with how well schools succeed. Schools in wealthier areas generally succeed better than schools in poor areas. What are you going to do about this? Can you try to force equality? Will racial integration be the answer? This is a puzzle that people have been trying to deal with for decades now. I don't really think they've solved it. But there's a lot of anger at the public school bureaucracy. And here in Washington, the career of the school's chancellor, who really did try to reform the schools, she fired a lot of teachers and principals. That really got Adrian Fenty, her boss, the mayor, into a lot of trouble, and he was fired, mostly because of the votes of African Americans who thought that he was unfair to their friends and relatives who were school teachers.
Right. We'll talk more about education tomorrow. Alfie Cohn, well known for his knowledge about and challenges to education will be on tomorrow's program to talk about schools, teacher and school evaluation, school reform, etc. So for those of you interested in this topic, be sure and tune in tomorrow. Here's an interesting email from Barbara in Duluth, Bill. How is it that the media did not find and expose O'Donnell's past, example dabbling in witchcraft, until after she was nominated in the primary? Why now?
That just came up. They found an awful lot of stuff in her background, which they talked about. That's why they dismissed her chances. A lot of critics thought she was a ridiculous candidate, which included a lot of Republicans. The Republican Party of Delaware was opposed to her and did everything they can to prevent her nomination. The problem is when voters are angry and when they want to make a statement and send a message, they don't care about that stuff. They just want to say, we want something different. We don't want the guy who's been in there for 30 years. We want all new people. And they don't look too carefully at those things. Now, this particular revelation about witchcraft seems to have surfaced only after she got elected. But there was plenty of other strange things that the candidate said beforehand that the voters should have been perfectly aware of.
Well, that's interesting. They didn't care.
They didn't care. When people are angry, when they're really angry, they don't care that much about that kind of information. They just want someone new and different.
Amy, thanks for your call. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Yeah, every time I hear the word Tea Party, I just think Republican Tea Party. It's just the splinter of the crazy right wing. And basically, us on the left who brought Obama into power, who are very disgusted with him, we are just as angry. But we haven't started gathering around a single issue. And we should start our own party, maybe the USA Pitbull Patriot Party, where our number one thing is to stop spending mindless money on a war. We're spending $4 billion a week to make Afghanistan and Iraq safe for an American president to walk down the street. But kids cannot walk to school in the city of Chicago. What is going on in Chicago? There is a war going on there.
Bill.
Well, the Afghanistan war certainly is a problem for President Obama. It's lost a lot of support. It is now just about as unpopular as the war in Iraq. A lot of Americans are asking precisely the same question that the caller is asking. And it's a real danger for President Obama because now the Afghanistan war, which started, of course, under President Bush in 2001, people thought it ended in December 2001 when we overthrew the Taliban and Afghanistan disappeared from the agenda for 5 years. Then suddenly it came back when Obama became president, said we get out of Iraq, mostly, leave a few troops, you know, some thousands of troops there, but also step up the war in Afghanistan. If he breaks his word and doesn't start significantly withdrawing American troops next July, I think he's going to face an angry backlash from his own base. Because, look, they put up with facts, grumbling, that he didn't close the base in Guantanamo as he planned to do, as he promised to do. I don't think they're going to sit by and watch this Afghanistan war go on and on and on. Democrats know how to do the anti-war thing, even against their own president.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to see any path to success in Afghanistan, isn't it?
It is. And a lot of people wonder, what are we fighting for? To a lot of Americans, the United States is fighting and Americans are dying to save a government that steals elections. You know, it's a very messy, complicated issue. Initially, Afghanistan had a lot of support because that's where the 9/11 attacks were planned. But that was, you know, 9 years ago. And since then, you know, a lot of people, while they're still outraged over 9/11, they've forgotten the role that Afghanistan really played in that, or the danger that we would face if the Taliban took over Afghanistan again, which would very likely happen if we left. Essentially, we're in Afghanistan to keep Pakistan engaged in the effort to fight the Taliban. And we're not sure where they are at all, because Pakistan is such a weak government and so divided. But if the United States were to leave Afghanistan, Pakistan would also give up the fight, and the likelihood is that Afghanistan would once again fall under Taliban control. And Americans know that that is a real threat to American security.
Right. It is astounding, Bill, isn't it, that we've already been there for 9 years.
That's right. It's almost as long now as the Vietnam War, one of the longest wars in American history. And there's no obvious progress being made. If anything, people keep reading that the Taliban is gaining strength.
Yes.
Because they are a legitimate local force, legitimate in the sense that they have local roots in a particular ethnic group in Afghanistan. And even if one defeats them, they're unlikely to disappear. We defeated them once. We threw them out of power in December 2001. But yet they come back. So now the perception is growing that we have to figure out some way of trying to incorporate them into an Afghan government to try to moderate their views because they're just not going to disappear.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Pat in Brookfield. Hi.
Hey, guys. I guess my answer is pretty simple. I see the country right now no different than it was, you know, 2.5, 3 years ago. Voters were upset. They wanted change from the previous guy. You know, they kind of overlooked a lot of Barack Obama's past as far as, you know, his associations. So there's really no difference now between what the voters in Delaware just did versus what, you know, the country on a larger scale, you know, did 2 years ago. So I guess that's my point. It just seems to kind of, the pendulum swings based on the mood of the country. And if anything, the American public just seems to be a little impatient either way. You know, if they don't like how something's going, they immediately want to change. And I think the debt and the deficit and the spending this year has just enraged a lot more people because they're looking at everything and they're like, man, this is just unsustainable.
The caller is exactly right. That is the way Americans feel. They are impatient. The president is pleading for patience, but their view 2 years ago was they're fed up with George Bush, with the Republicans, with the Iraq War, and then, of course, with the economy, with the collapse of the financial sector. So they voted for change. They're not getting it fast enough in not even 2 years since Obama took office. So they're ready to try something else. The polls don't indicate people have suddenly regained confidence in Republicans. They have not. If anything, the image of the Republican Party is worse than the Democrats. And the Tea Party doesn't have a particularly positive image either. But they just want change. They're voting protest. The easiest way to vote protest is to vote against the party in power, and that's the Democrats. So there's kind of an anomic protest going on. People are angry, mostly jobs, the economy, almost entirely that. They want something done to restore jobs and to allow people to keep their houses. So they're just voting this kind of broad, anomic protest. But there's not a vote of confidence, really, in anybody, which is different from the way it was 2 years ago when people really did have a lot of hope in President Obama.
They sure did. It's been a very short period of time that the mood has switched so dramatically.
It has. But don't forget, Bill Clinton went through this in his first 2 years. The confidence in him collapsed. In 1994, he lost both houses of Congress for the first time in 40 years. It was a terrible shock. At the end of 1994, I was around. I covered it. People thought Clinton was hopeless for another term. He would never get reelected. But then, you know, just as fast as confidence disappeared in Bill Clinton, it was regained. Because what happened? The economy started to recover. Jobs were regained. Everything started to boom. In the 90s, we thought it was a boom. It turned out to be more of a bubble. Nevertheless, things got better. And when things get better and people have jobs and they're making money, they look around and they say, now, what was it we were so angry about a couple of years ago? Things can turn for the positive very quickly, just as they turn to the negative.
What about this particular go-around?
Well, the problem with this go-around is the deficit and is so enormous that it'll be very difficult for us to grow out of it. You know, Ronald Reagan once said in 1985, the only way we know how to deal with deficits is economic growth. That is true, because we can't really raise taxes in any significant way enough to deal with the deficit. And there are very few programs like entitlements that we're going to cut significantly. The best way to deal with deficits, the easiest way, is just to grow the economy. That is what happened in the 90s. For 4 years, we had a surplus in this country. But the deficit has gotten so enormous under Bush and Obama that economists tell us there's just no way we can grow that fast. We'd have to grow about twice as fast as China in order to grow our way out of this deficit back into surpluses. And that's going to be very, very tough.
Email from Connie. Bill, you mentioned that the last four administrations have tried to end the bickering. What is the origin of this? Reagan came before the four, and I've long felt that this mess began with him. Maybe it's class warfare, which brought to the center the most extreme views of the two sides. Can you please point out that fear and anger do not form the basis for good decision-making?
Well, that is certainly true. Fear and anger do not form the basis for good decision-making. Some of it did. A lot of the division did start with Ronald Reagan, who was an admired president but wasn't popular with everyone. He took very controversial stands. But I would go back all the way to the 1960s. That's when you saw the division emerging in American politics. That's when you saw the left, a new left emerging, and what a lot of people didn't notice in those days, which was that there was an enormous new right movement to resist the left. The division, of all things, was along lines of religion or religious observance. There was a backlash to the 60s among people who go to church regularly and who objected to the changes of that era. Ronald Reagan really brought a lot of those people to power. He brought the religious right into the Republican Party. And that division has been there ever since. Even now, what we're seeing just right at this last few weeks is the merger between the Tea Party, which always was about economic protest, and the values voters, the religious right, who had been kind of eclipsed by the Tea Party. The Glenn Beck rally was all about God and patriotism. Now we're seeing the emergence of Islamophobia on the right. So we are seeing the values voters and the Tea Party right sort of get together. But it really dates from the 60s. I'll give you a quote. Bill Clinton said in 2002, if you look back at the 60s and you think they did more good than harm, you're a Democrat. If you think they did more harm than good, you're a Republican. That's the division.
There's a lot of truth in that. How many people do you think will show up for the Stuart Colbert rally?
Well, they're hoping for a big turnout.
I know.
They'll get a sizable turnout. Yeah, I think it'll probably... I don't know. I've learned not to estimate crowds. Even the Park Service can't do that. But I think it'll be a significant statement, and they intend to have fun doing it. But the point is that there is something of a backlash emerging to the Tea Party. It's coming from Michael Bloomberg. It's coming from Stuart and Colbert.
Right.
There are a lot of people who are fed up with this festering division, and they don't see the Tea Party as giving much hope.
Let's go to Scott from Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Scott. Hello, Scott. You there? Scott's not there. Arlene in New Berlin. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning. This is a very interesting topic. My suggestion is, and I'm sorry if I'm a little bit loud, no career politicians. If you can't do the job in 8 years, you're out. Just like the president is elected, these people aren't doing their job. I listen to all the politics on radio and television, and I'd like to pull every inch of my hair out because nobody is following the Constitution the way it was said. No career politicians. It shouldn't be. They should be out in 8 years if they can't do the job. Thank you, and I'll take my answer.
All right, Arlene. Thanks for the call. Bill?
There's a lot of there's a very strong view out there like that of Arlene. That professional the idea of a professional politician is a contradiction in terms. It's an oxymoron. We don't admire professionalism in politics. We think politicians should come in, try to solve problems, and then go home. The idea of making politics into a career is really offensive to a lot of Americans. Our Constitution really did institutionalize a system of limited government. I mean, that's been part of the American value system for over 200 years. That's what the Tea Party is arguing right now, that we've gotten away from limited government. We have more limited government in this country than any other country in the world. The result is that this country is very hard to govern. There are too many ways to stop things from happening: divisions of power, federalism, separations between different branches and between the House and Senate, filibusters. That's not even in the Constitution. It's easy to stop things from happening in this country. How does the country work? We are governed, and sometimes very well. Why? If an issue is a crisis, Americans demand action, and they want it now, which is what they feel about jobs right now. They want something done about the economy. But an issue has to become a crisis in order for politicians to deal with it. At this point, deficit and climate change have not reached that peak of urgency.
People use this phrase, and you hear a lot of it now in all these midterm television ads, but if you like the person who's in office, then you tend to think of them as a fine public servant. If you don't, they're a career politician.
That's right. I mean, it's an odd thing when the caller, Arlene, talked about term limits. And most people do believe in them. They pass every time they're on the ballot. But I always think it's strange because, you know, we already have the right to fire politicians who are not doing a good job. We've done a lot of that this year in the primaries. But Americans seem to want to give up the right to keep politicians and public servants on who are doing a good job. They say, I don't care what kind of job you're doing. We may love you. You may be doing a great job. But after 8 years, you're out. That's an odd thing to want to do. But it just shows the exasperation people feel at the fact that politicians don't usually get the job done.
All Things Political is what you're listening to here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bill Schneider is our guest. He is CNN's senior political analyst, and he's been there since 1990. He is an expert on public opinion research, a distinguished senior fellow and resident scholar at the Third Way, and the Omer and Nancy Hurst Professor of Public Policy at George Mason University in Washington. He's a member of the CNN political team that was an award and an Emmy in 2006 election coverage and a Peabody in the 2008 coverage. More phone calls in a moment. Our lines are filled, but you ought to be able to get through in the time we have remaining. 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The State of the Family Farm, hour number two of our program this Monday. Laverne in DeForest, hello.
Hey, good morning. Islamophobia in this country is pretty much a myth. There's still a lot more hate crimes against Jews than there are Muslims in this country. Bipartisanship by this president? You got to be kidding me. How many times, Bill, did you see and hear the president in joint meetings say to John McCain, John, I won the election? That was one of the first things he said when there was a joint meeting with the Republicans. I won the election. Now, you know, if public radio and the rest of the lamestream media would have spent more time with Obama's books, where he actually told us all that he's a socialist, et cetera, instead of worrying about how much Sarah Palin's wardrobe cost, you would know that he is a socialist and is trying to govern that way. What do you think all this community organizing is all about? And what do you think, Bill Schneider, that for him to say, and how many times has he said it, oodles, I want to fundamentally change this country. Define that, if not a move towards socialism.
I guess you defined it for him, Laverne. Bill, go ahead.
Well, I don't think he ever called himself a socialist
no.
in books, but I'd like to see those references. But as far as I know, he didn't. He did say that he won the election, which is undeniably true. And he did, of course, campaign to change the country because people voted for change in 2008, not to change the Constitution, but to change the direction of the country, which is what they want to do again now, and will very likely vote for the Republicans to do that. Obama did make an effort at bipartisanship. You might remember that health care meeting where he called the Republicans in. They had that somber discussion here in Washington trying to negotiate some bipartisanship on health care. It didn't really work. And both sides blame each other. But I think there were some sincere gestures, and a lot of Democrats complained that he was so interested in attracting Republican support that he watered down the health care bill and some of his other proposals to try to attract Republicans, and they just sort of crossed their arms and said no. So that's an argument you can have for quite some time. But I think there was some sincerity behind those gestures. It just didn't work.
In terms of the anti-Islamic sentiment in this country, I find it extremely troubling. It makes me wonder, what country are we living in?
Well, the caller was right. I mean, you probably do find more anti-black and anti-Jewish sentiment than anti-Muslim, because most people have very little contact with Muslims, although that's growing with the Muslim population. But there is some resentment. People aren't familiar with Islam. A lot of fundamentalist Christians are deeply aggrieved by the rise of Islam in the world and in this what they see as growing Muslim presence in this country. You often find that kind of backlash, particularly against newer groups. You found it against the influx of Latino immigrants in this country and the anti-immigration movement. That often happens. But in the end, I have confidence that here in the United States of America, you know, we get over these things. You often make two steps forward and one step back with gays and Latinos and Muslims and Jews. That's always been the case. I mean, remember when Kennedy ran for office in 1960, his being Catholic was a huge issue, and there was a lot of backlash against it. He barely won the election. But now, when a candidate is Catholic, it's meaningless. Joe Biden is Catholic. I don't recall that people ever brought that up. John Kerry, when he ran for president, the only people who had any problem with that was the Catholic Church, who opposed him because they said he did believe in abortion rights.
Right.
So we get over these prejudices, but they're bound to happen. There's always a bit of a backlash.
Do we still have them against Mormons? I'm thinking of Mitt Romney.
Well, yeah, there are some people who don't want to vote for a Mormon. A lot of them are evangelicals who think Mormons are a heretical sect. Mitt Romney did not do well in Southern Republican primaries in 2008. He may have a problem again if he runs in 2012. that would be a new experience for people, because a lot of Americans are unfamiliar with Mormonism, just as they're unfamiliar with Islam.
What did you think of the reception that, this is totally in a different topic, the reception the Pope received in England?
Well, there was, in England, there's a strong tradition of protest. A lot of people are angry. Of course, anti-Catholic feeling has been part of British tradition since the rule of Henry VIII. They used to murder Catholics. And a lot of it was mixed up with anti-Irish sentiment. But it still appears to be alive and well, and now it's coming mostly from the left. But it's coming from a lot of people who object to the church's covering up the pedophilia that's going on, the crimes, the terrible crimes, and they think that the Pope actually was involved in the past before he became Pope with the cover-up exercise. They also object to the church's position on a lot of social issues like gay rights and abortion rights. So, yeah, they came out to protest. It wasn't a huge protest, but it was significant, and it made a very strong statement.
Yeah. Steve in Madison, hi. Steve is not there. Scott has called back from Sturgeon Bay. Hello.
Good morning. I just have a couple of quick points. Actually, the first one's a question regarding strategy. I'm wondering if the Republicans would be beneficial in pointing out that the Democrats have held the House and the Senate the last 4 years. Because the president keeps saying that, you know, the Republicans drove the car into the ditch. That's the metaphor he uses. But we're still in peril, and the Democrats do have some responsibility here. I mean, they've held the House and the Senate for the last 4 years, and obviously the presidency the last two. That's my first question. My second one is, I really don't like the generalization of the Tea Parties and Republicans in general. And, Bill, you're kind of doing it a little bit. In 1994, when the Republicans won the House and the Senate, Peter Jennings got on and said America had a temper tantrum. It seems to me the press always says when Republicans win, what's wrong with those angry white guys? But when Democrats win, it's all of a sudden the electorate is enlightened. They're so smart now because they've elected Barack Obama or they've elected, you know, Bill Clinton. But when the Republicans are winning, it's all based on anger, which there's not a lot of anger out there. There's some, but it's still minor. And I don't like the narrative, the template that you guys put Republicans and Tea Parties in. It's a small minority that are probably anger or bitter, but that's a consistent narrative from you guys in the press. It's kind of irritating, actually.
Bill?
Well, you do find a lot of anger, I think, and it's certainly visible. The Tea Party may not be enormous, but they are very visible, they're very active, and they've won some primaries. They've upset a lot of incumbents who have been there for an awfully long time. They are a significant political story. I agree the press is not always balanced in its coverage of Democrats and Republicans, liberals, conservatives. They're looking always for a good story, and they'll try to dramatize it. And that may be what they're doing now with the Tea Party movement. But the Tea Party movement wants to get that kind of play. They want to say that they're angry because they say, specifically, the government isn't listening to the people. We're the people, and we intend to rise up and make a statement. And the media is presenting it in exactly that way. So, I'm not going to say the press is always scrupulously balanced in its coverage. They're not. They try to be. They're not always. And when Democrats go off the edge, I think they depict that also in fair and reasonable terms. But there's no question that there's, I'd say for most Americans, they're not angry, but they're extremely anxious and fed up.
Thanks for the call, Scott. Deb in Wildwood, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Bill. First of all, I want to point out that Obama is no socialist, because I'm really sure of that, because I am a socialist. And he is certainly not, because I would have a universal health care system, single payer. We do not. You know, he made a lot of compromises to try to go down the middle of the road, and I think he is a centrist, if not maybe slightly to the right of center. So he is certainly no socialist. That's the first thing. The second thing is I don't think we'll ever have the Senate or the Congress that we want unless we pay for it with campaign finance reform. Unless we're willing to pay for the campaigns, for the candidates to go out there, then they're going to be beholden to people, you know, with money to raise money. So, you know, it's just that has to happen. And as far as anger, I'm angry. I'm angry at my fellow Americans for not taking the time to investigate what really is going on, to really, you know, separate fact from fiction or fact from feeling.
All right, we have about 15 seconds left, Bill.
Campaign finance reform, good luck with that, but the Supreme Court is not on your side because they keep saying that money is speech, and corporations and labor unions can give as much money as they want, and it's perfectly free speech. People don't like the idea of their tax money being used to pay for campaign ads.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being with us. I really enjoyed the hour. Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Bill Schneider, our guest this hour of the program for all things political. He, of course, seen widely on CNN, where he is their senior political analyst and has performed that role on TV since 1990. He's also a distinguished senior fellow and resident scholar at Third Way, and he's a professor of public policy at George Mason University in Washington, D.C. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this interesting hour, and thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and we'll return with another hour of Monday Conversation, which I'm sure you're going to enjoy, so please stay with us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.